Well, welcome everyone. Thank you for joining us again for another Basic Conversation. And my name is Brad Rieger. I get the privilege of being your host and also the privilege of sitting across from Father James Basic. Father Basic, it's good to be here with you.
Good to be with you, Brad, as always.
In the season five, where the umbrella is kind of Pope Francis and his impact. And
yeah, remembering the Francis legacy is so important.
Yes. And today our conversation is going to focus on Christian marriage.
What Pope Francis has said about Christian marriage, right?
Yes. So there's multiple avenues we can start with this. Should we start with the context, though, that as a priest and talking about Christian marriage, should we talk about just the obvious there first?
And we definitely should.
Okay.
Let's get it out there.
Let's get it out.
Brad, I've never been married.
What?
Never been married.
Okay.
I know nothing about it. You have been married, on the other hand.
Yes.
How many years?
We'll be 38 next year.
38 years to a wonderful woman, Laura.
Yes.
Just a wonderful partner.
Met at the University of Toledo. And
yep.
Yep.
And you have children.
Two adult daughters and two grandchildren.
Your one daughter I baptized when she was an infant.
Yes. And you will remember this, but it's September 3rd today. On September 4th in 1994, Shelby had her heart surgery.
Uh-huh.
And that morning you came and said a prayer over her.
Yes.
And that was a very poignant moment. We were unsure of the outcome.
Yes.
But you came.
And here she is doing wonderfully well.
And she's a mother of two, married and mother of two.
And you're, that means you're a grandfather.
Yes. And grateful every day.
Yeah.
Grateful every day.
Well, out of all the stuff that Francis wrote, well, he wrote a lot. He wrote an apostolic exhortation on the joy of love, right? He wrote a letter once to married couples and so on. So out of all the stuff that you have read that Francis has written, what's the best advice he gave or the thing you remember most out of what he has said?
Probably the most, just the brief, and he meant it to be a very human thing. So the three most important words in marriage, please, thanks, and sorry.
Sorry?
Sorry.
Yeah.
He kind of captured, I guess I like
that. Say it again, please.
Please, thanks, and sorry.
Yeah. I know he makes a big deal out of forgiveness, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Forgiveness. I often said, I do know something about marriage, Brad, from my counseling experience. What I mostly know is how it goes badly.
Mm.
I always said, not many people knocked on my door and said, I want to tell you how great our marriage is. It was more like, we're not doing too well.
Right.
What do we do? I always said, one of the main things you have to do is forgive each other for being human, for being limited and so on. So so Christian marriage. One of the things I liked about what he said, he called Christian marriage an icon of Christ's love for the church. That a good married couple is representing and reminding us of the kind of deep love that Christ has for his church. There's another image that comes to me that he used, and that is the domestic church. He said, you and Laura form together a domestic church, a church in the home, the family. The family became like a church where you learned what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. You learned what it meant to have unselfish love. You meant what it meant to learned what it meant to help your children grow up and be good adults. It's a school, a school in Christian charity. And so you learn that way. So we're drawing on a number of sources here. So domestic church, you dig that idea? Is that good?
Sure, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Meaning that we all have a responsibility, my wife and I, to make it a Christ-like Christian framework.
Exactly.
There's some responsibility for us to do that. Yes.
This apostolic exhortation, the joy of love, came out of a synod. So Pope Francis has been on having synods. that is meetings in Rome where he tried to get various viewpoints and people from different experiences, especially people from the margins who would come in and share their thoughts and feelings and so on. And so he wanted to hear from everybody. And there were whole programs initiated to say, to come to Rome and to talk about family life and what marriage was about. And then he wrote his summary, in a sense, of in this apostolic exhortation, the joy of love. Here's what the key, one of the key things here that I want to get across is, Francis keeps wanting to say, this is the ideal. He said, we have to have an ideal for what Christian marriage is like, you know. So he says, Christian marriage will be where two people share the warmth of friendship and the ardor of passionate love. I thought that was it. So he brings into, you know, you probably would say, Laura's your best friend, or am I speaking?
Yes.
Best friend and your passionate lover,
yes.
Yeah. Produce children together, yeah. So that Francis says we keep that alive. So for him, the ideal is that it's an exclusive love. It's the kind of love that you have for her that you're not supposed to have for anyone else. It's an exclusive kind of love. And it's a love that's strengthened by the sacrament of marriage. So we say there's seven sacraments, right? And baptism and so on. And marriage is one of the seven sacraments. And so when you got married, you celebrated the sacrament of matrimony. And Francis always says that's, that sacrament that you received helps strengthen you and guide you and help you to become a better marriage partner. So he presents the ideal, and he also, for various reasons, the ideal is that the marriage was consummated, that is, that you had sexual intercourse. But when Francis goes into, he says, but there are no perfect marriages. That's the part I know.
Yes.
There are no perfect marriages. There's no perfect spouses. There's no perfect domestic church. It's always limited and partial and so on. And so Francis says, let's recognize that it's not going to be perfect, but let's look at how the church could help people do better. In other words, he said, let's start out and say, well, there's two people cohabitating, okay, living together, not married. Francis says, well, that could be just selfishness. It could be. But it also be that there's couples living together that are doing their best. I'm dealing with a couple right now like that who they just don't think he can get married yet for financial reasons and other relationship questions. But so Francis says, let's see, let's don't say, well, those people are sinners, they're cohabitating and so on, but say, no, they're limited in living the ideal. At least some of them are. And so let's not start out by saying people in marriages that aren't perfect are sinners, but how can we help them advance? How can they make them better, help them to be better? So the pastoral response of a priest should be is, listen to where people, every situation's different, you know. Some people come to my room and say, you know, tell you the truth, Father, I met somebody else, and who, my husband is not interested in poetry, I'm interested in poetry. My fellow English teacher at school loves poetry, and I like to talk to him about it. I can't do that with my husband. So there becomes a limitation. I always said that sooner or later, married couples are going to meet somebody who touches them in a way their spouse doesn't, and they have to know what to do with that. And so this girl that I'm talking to, I say, you know, be upfront about your relationship with this guy, the English teacher, and tell your husband about it. And but if he doesn't like that and can't deal with it and says, I can't deal with this, then you have to break off that relationship with the English teacher. So I'm trying to, you know, make concrete what Francis is trying to tell us, so that the ideal of marriage, so the pastoral task becomes, well, how do priests and the church as a whole help people to grow towards the ideal? So then that brings up the question of, well, how does the church do that? How does the church help? Well, one thing that often helps is that for people to talk to their pastor about advice on how they could come closer together. And it comes, you get down to the situation of that, what he calls irregular situations, and the sticky one becomes divorce and remarriage. And so that he addressed that in chapter 8 of his apostolic exhortation. What about Catholics who are married, divorced, remarried, and how can they participate in the life of the church? So Francis says that, well, the church should help them in every way they can. This is a couple now. Let's envision this as a couple. They both come from divorce situations. They met, they remarried, and they have children by the new marriage. They got a wonderful marriage going. They're getting along. They're productive. They're raising good children and so on. Well, how can the church help them? And one of the things Francis says that became so controversial is that we could help them in many ways. One way, this is footnote 351, most famous footnote in all of apostolic exhortation, I think, in which he said one of the ways they could be helped is to receive communion. And he says communion is not a reward for being good or perfect. Communion is a medicine for the weak. And he says it. And so that actually put into words something that I know a lot of priests acted in the past. We called it the internal forum. It was written up in the theological literature, internal forum, and I know priests who practice that. That is, they say, well, this couple, if they could get an annulment, but it would end up ruin the life of their children, say. And therefore, an internal form says, well, we're going to assume that they could get this annulment, and therefore we're going to tell this couple that, well, feel free to go to communion. That was a common practice.
Is the practice or the dogma of the church that if you're divorced, no communion?
Kind of the official rule, right? The teaching has been all along that a marriage freely consented to, consummated by sexual intimacy, is indissoluble. That is, it's permanent. It can't be reversed. It's a sacrament, and that's a permanent situation. And so the problem became for the critics of Francis, well, he's denying a fundamental teaching of the church that marriage is indissoluble, permanent, he can't break it. And but he's telling people that, well, you could discern that communion would be helpful and proper and good in conscience. You're essentially denying the indissolubility of marriage, which is crucial to Catholic teaching. And the person who brought that out most clearly in the public realm was the New York Times columnist, op-ed writer, Ross Douthat, D-O-U-T-H-A, Douthat, you pronounce it. And he made a big deal out of it. He said that Francis, by opening up this possibility for people to receive communion, is essentially denying an essential truth of the church. And he is therefore leading the church towards schism, break away from the official teaching. And it became, Cardinal Raymond Burke is another one who responded the same way and said, Francis is acting like running a ship without a rudder. Francis always insists on this kind of thing. The church should accompany people on their journey, whatever their journey is. If people are sick, and church should be with them and comforting them, and sacrament of anointing of the sick and so on should be part of it. We should accompany people on their journey. Don't assume that they're sinners. Assume that there's ways to help them to live up to the ideal in a better way. I think he is pastorally brilliant. In other words, the chapter is enigmatic. It's not totally clear. He doesn't come out and say, well, you can all receive communion. What he's asking for is discernment. You know, I remember Pope Francis is a Jesuit. He's big on the spiritual exercise. He's big on discernment. He thinks that's how we should live our lives. We should be trying to be in touch with God's teachings, be in touch with Christ, try to listen to the promptings of the Holy Spirit, and discern in a prayerful setting what's God calling me to do.
And that footnote, was that a message to pastors and also to individuals?
It became a message for pastors, yeah. And I think a number of pastors, became maybe more empathetic to couples struggling. I always say that the key for the pastoral ministry is always listening. So if you listen to people, like I'm listening right now to a couple that they're living together, they would like to get married, not ready economically and so on, I want to be with them. I want to listen to them. I want to understand why they're delaying marriage. I want to try to see if they are interested in making a real Christian marriage or not. So discernment is a major thing. It comes from St. Ignatius, the spiritual exercises. So Jesuits, I've lived with Jesuits at Oxford in England, and I lived with Jesuits in New York, and they are so big on spiritual exercises and on how they are formed by that and how the discernment becomes part of their life pattern. It's one of the reasons I think they're such great educators, because they are willing to listen to where people are at and try to respond to it. So Francis, Dalton says he's guilty of heresy, that he's denying a fundamental truth of what the church is all about. And then Raymond Burke, one of his great critics, he said he had questions for five questions that he wanted Francis to answer about indissolubility of marriage and so on, and the Pope didn't respond to that.
Didn't take the bait.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the next kind of controversial aspect of Francis and in the same-sex marriage and unions? Do we want to talk about that?
Or
do
no.
We no. Okay, we won't.
No, no, we better stay with
Christian marriage.
Christian marriage, so we've got an ideal,
yeah,
right?
An ideal, yes.
An ideal of Christian marriage. I mean, that whole idea of Christ think of Christ as a teacher, not of rules, but of ideals. So when Jesus says, go the extra mile, you know, if somebody asks for your coat, give them your coat too. No, that's not a rule. That's not a law.
Right.
That's not a commandment, you know, go the extra mile. It's an ideal. It's the way in the kingdom people would live. So Jesus preached the kingdom of God, the reign of God, which be imperfect now and be complete only. There's signs of it now, but it'll be complete only at the end time in what we call the parousia, when Christ is all in all. So what that's a good thing, because it tells you and Laura that, well, we could make improvement. After all these years, we might go on a retreat together, or we might pray together, or we might listen to a talk or something. And we could, so it keeps us from being self-righteous, all of us, because we're not perfect. We could always improve. That's good. Be on edge. Always think, how would we do just a little bit better with Christ's grace? So it keeps us from being self-righteous, and it keeps us on our toes, all of us, whatever we're doing. I'm supposed to be helping people discern their next step in marriage, and it tells me I better be at the top of my game.
I think various talks I've seen you convey that marriage should be outward looking too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that I think for Laura and I, when we're at our best, we're really in tune to the service aspect.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and people that are struggling, especially health wise. I mean, especially as we've gotten older, more and more people we know are just right. And so you can develop our own, for lack of a better word, a ministry or a sensitivity to that.
And I think love it, yeah.
If we're at our best, we're helping each other.
Exactly.
So that's, for me, it's a that the Christian marriage perspective is very active.
Right. Oh, love it, Brad. Great, yeah. I'm not sure I should try to expand, but it's such a good point. And the whole Christian marriage has an outgoing thing. Because if you are a good domestic church, you will help society. You become part of the building blocks of society. If you are trying to be an icon of Christ's love for his church, then that means that you have to live a life of Christian love. And our teaching is always to go outward. Love is expansive. Love is... reaches out. True love is not contained or isolated. It serves. So we have our whole tradition of Catholic social teaching, that you try to live out as a married couple, and you can, do that together. So yeah, I want to just undersign your what you're saying. You said it better, and I shouldn't have tried to improve it.
I think the other thing about the other...
Sometimes priests should be quiet.
No, I think the other aspect about this other-oriented, you can make it just for your spouse, right? So if I'm at my best as a husband,
yeah,
I'm really thinking about how to love and be kind and be thoughtful of Laura, right?
Yeah.
And help her be the most fulfilled person she could be.
Yeah.
Right? So there's that outward for the others, but if you there's messaging about Christian lifestyle just for the spouse, and come up short often, but to the ideals, to be focused on your spouse. And the other aspect that Francis was big on is it's just not the romantic love.
Oh, good.
And that eventually actually tapers down, right?
Yeah.
And that there's a deepness of commitment and love, and you see each other differently as you get older.
I'm glad we reversed roles. No, he says that we can't get into a notion that marital love is diminished by when the passion is not as intense.
Correct. Yes.
It has to live past that. And that's going to happen and always happens, and just inevitably by human nature. And that the commitment to the spouse has to outlive that. Has to be deeper, stronger, longer than the loss of passion.
I think the other last most important thing is the idea of unconditional love, right? Jesus is unconditional with love. So in a marriage, you're always practicing this idea of the forgiveness part. And mainly they're small things, right?
Yeah.
Someone says the best thing, if you want a long marriage, have a short memory, right?
Yeah.
So, but I think that idea of an unconditional stance toward your spouse.
You made so many good points, and I'm going to be quiet for once and say, give you the last word. That's wonderful stuff. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.